Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of those posts covering finance and property news. Edwin is back, and Edwin, you're in transit, so this is going to be a bit shorter than normal, but welcome, welcome. Good to see you.
I'm either in transit or I'm a little bit of a transistor at the moment, so echoing from wall to wall.
Yeah, well, it's good to see you here, Edwin, and there's a lot to talk about, of course, with the current shenanigans that's going on. And I have to say that however I look at this, I'm sort of scratching my head a little bit. We have Trump and Greenland. We have shenanigans in Australia with regard to the free speech or not free speech, and, you know, guns and, oh dear. And in fact, if I think about the week ahead, I think there are a number of potential black swan events. For example, the Fed on Monday is going to provide a significant liquidity injection to the markets. We've got the Trump announcement on Wednesday at Davos, and Friday, potentially a Japan rate hike too. So there's quite a lot potentially going on in the markets. In fact, I made a show over the weekend called Financial Markets Are Liquidity Black Swans Emerging, because wherever I look, there seem to be a whole range of potential black swan events. But actually, this was the one that really caught my attention, and I know you've seen it too. Financial crisis triggered by aliens, said former policy expert. Can you believe it? And in fact, you know, this is referring to an article in The Times, and I actually made a show about it because, well, I'm thinking, what else can you, you know, what else could possibly be coming? You know, we've got pretty much everything else that we could possibly think about. So my show was called Couldn't Alien Invasion Spark a Banking Crisis? So there you have it. Can't make this stuff up, Edwin. We're getting into more and more crazy land to the point where anything sounds feasible, doesn't it?
I'm just waiting for the announcement that the current government are going to bring migration to a halt. And that would really put the icing on the cake of all the craziness, don't you think? But it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
No. But talk about craziness, just to sort of, you know, think about some of the stuff. The China story is quite interesting. They have this massive rise in terms of trade surplus. So this lovely meme that I saw here, despite the duty, the tariffs, you know, and Washington, everybody else, they're heading off to the global markets. And the data was pretty powerful, with the China trade surplus hitting a new high despite the US levies, which I thought was fascinating. And also, talking about China, thinking that you're heading up that way, they're generating way, way, way more electricity power than anybody else now. Look how much it's shot up, which tells you something quite important in the context of AI. Oh, and then, of course, we've got Davos. I thought you might be going to Davos, actually. You know, that's where all the 1% are heading over the next few days. Trump's going to make some interesting comments there, probably in Davos. 64 international world leaders are there. So everybody of anybody is heading to Davos. So are you sure you're not going there, Edwin?
No, I'm not going there. No, I wasn't invited. Not this year, anyway. I'll wait until Trump does his thing, and I'll probably go next year. No, actually, heading to Guangzhou, and then from Guangzhou to further inland to a third tier city for a Century 21 conference. This city alone, it's a third tier city, but there's something like 10,000 real estate offices, Century 21 real estate offices around that region. And that shows you the size and the magnitude of the brand in that area. Then after that, we go back to Guangzhou, meet some of the offices there as well. Won't be a conference as such. And then from there, we're catching up with the heads of the Century 21 offices in Hong Kong. So we had to reverse the trip around because of a bit of a hiccup that we had earlier today. We're supposed to do the show today from Hong Kong. But look, going back to China, China's an interesting story. You hear of what Canada's just done. Canada's just opened up the door. Canada's going to be the dumping ground for EVs, for Chinese EVs, and they're going to take on more than what we are, I guess, per capita population. So it's going to be interesting. There's a huge surplus of goods, as you know. But I'll get more insights when I'm there, and more to the point is, we're going to see what the heads of the major offices and real estate offices are saying and talking about to bring our audience up to date with what the WeChat chatterers there in China are doing. We know that it's very difficult unless you're very, very well connected, and I mean you're either well connected on the political scene or you're well connected with the military in order to get any funds out of China. I'm not saying that it can't be done; it's impossible, but it is very, very, very difficult for the middle class. So you really have to have those high connections. Most of the money that's coming over from China still into Australia is obviously money that's already sitting in Hong Kong or in other Asia Pacific countries, Malaysia, Singapore, and the like. But we'll see. But that's what goes back to one of my predictions, Martin, is what it's going to be interesting, the geopolitical scene there in that region. If that escalates, if that gets a little bit hot, well, we know where all the money and where the safe haven's going to be. So, for us, it's a bit of a wait and see. And also this trip's going to be touching base with more of the locals to see what they're saying. I get the feeling. So does Dusty, obviously. Dusty and Evan coming along in order to they've got to interpret for me. So we'll see, Martin. But as to the craziness, I really can't see it any crazier than what we're seeing here. I think our property spectrum, our property landscape is crazy as it is. And when they are moving into the territory beyond crazy, we're moving into the territory where we told our viewers, we brought it to the attention of our viewers, almost over a year ago that the government's going to have its hands tied and it's going to have a battle on its hands, and the tool of preference or the weapon of choice is going to be none other than heritage listings. I said even the old asbestos shacks are going to be going to have a heritage covering over them in order to stop the developers and in order to stop the government and the state government from turning areas, well-to-do areas, into high-rise developments and potentially in the future high-rise ghettos.
Yeah, well, it's fascinating here that, of course, they're using any excuse to resist the high-rise upsell, particularly in some of the more affluent suburbs. And heritage has always been one of those things that has been very protected. I know I used to live in a heritage area at Cremorne Point, and for a long, long time, that actually stopped a lot of development. A huge pressure to reduce some of those heritage guidelines, but the local residents stood firm and said, no, we don't want stuff here, and build it up there. So they built it up on the main road at Mossman rather than actually down at Cremorne Point. So this is another very interesting case in point in terms of, people are going to run interference on the state agenda to build up, as we've talked about, build small and build dog boxes, despite the fact that people don't want to live in them. So it's just going to be the continuing story here. And I guess there's another interesting observation as we sort of progress through this show, Edwin. A lot of people have been talking about the established properties and buyers overseas, etc., etc. So fascinating to see this article, which was some Chinese buyers dominate foreign-owned property, new data reveals. Well, really? It's not quite the true story, is it?
I mean, this is what you and I have been talking about for a while, and even some of the independent politicians have been starting just to talk about it over the last couple of months. And as the stats, the ABS stats come out, and also the ATO figures come out. Now, a lot of people are under the impression that these are the only that this is the amount of homes owned, and out of the 40,000 by foreigners, and out of the 40,000, they're saying that 67, if I'm correct there, or thereabouts, are owned by Chinese nationals. Let's, to me, this is not really this doesn't really paint the true picture. As I put out in a post, and I tagged the politician that was speaking about it, last week, and I said, look, there's six ways to Sunday in order to navigate around the Foreign Investment Review Board and how to get around it. And one of the main ways to get around it is obviously by having a bear trust, having family, friends, and relatives. Now, this is money that's come out of Asia, China, decades ago, now many years ago, before it was really shut down over the last 3 or 4 years. So this is how secondary property, and I mean established property, has been bought, and this is how they navigate around it. And it's not just the Chinese; it's many other foreigners as well. So when we talk about 40,000, I mean 40,000 is just. Yeah, look, there's 40,000 apartments in Parramatta. There's 40,000 apartments in Hurstville, Chatswood, in and around those areas there. So, in the Parramatta LGA, it's not a lot of homes. So it doesn't really look. It doesn't paint the real picture. Our concern should be how many foreign nationals own, and that's. Foreigners that don't have PR own established homes under trusts, under companies, under other entities, bear trusts, as I said. And what's for me, what's more alarming, Martin, is the ownership of rural property, the ownership of water rights, and those water rights are traded. And these are water rights that our farmers. Need and they become so expensive. Even the many Labor politicians, including I'm of the understanding, I could be wrong, but I'm of the understanding that some of the high-ranking Labor politicians are very much into water right contracts. So because it's used as a commodity, you can trade it. Now the other thing is also temporary visa holders, which are your students, that they there are loopholes that they can buy secondary property as long as they sell before they once they finish the studies. So there's a lot more than 40,000. There's I would say you could easily double that, if not triple that, if you really started looking deeper. But we're never going to get to that real picture because, as I said, it's predominantly through accountancy, practices, through financial planning practices, that these that foreigners own properties. And now we bring into the mix your big corporations, that are building the build to rents as well. So we've unfortunately really handed over the title of our future generations to foreigners, and we're doing it. And I dare say, Martin, it's we're purposefully, or the politicians are purposefully turning a blind eye.
Well, it's a very narrow definition, isn't it, that they're actually touching on here? And as you say, there's a much broader canvas that people don't want to talk about. And this is, of course, why the true story with regard to the footprint of foreign investment and how it's actually hitting Australia is hardly being spoken about. But as you say, politicians don't want to touch that. They're concerned about the economic impact if they did. And of course, there's also the question of, would they appear to be anti-particular groups if they started talking about it? But it is a very important issue. I'm interested that, One Nation, who's been, of course, quite vocal on some of this stuff, is now leading the polls. So, it's fascinating to me that we have a situation where the political story in Australia is very much that, One Nation is ahead on primary votes against the coalition. And the satisfaction of both the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition are both very, very low at the moment, which is quite fascinating. So there's a lot of political noise here as well. Oh, and by the way, if you want to talk about that, it's worth noting that the Albanese government's housing target costs are blown out by $3.8 billion as they warn of failure. So, you know, wherever you look at it, however you look at it, you've got to say that the existing political environment is actually not very conducive to having the right conversation about this sort of stuff. And what that means is, of course, is that we don't get the full story. Now, talking about the full story, here's another one. Did you see this? Peter actually put this out, saying a number of Melbourne agents are reporting a huge increase in Sydney buyers advocates snapping up property sub $700,000, no due diligence, no research, just paying top dollar to secure the property and move on to the next deal. I wonder whether that's to do with government intervention too.
Yeah, this is the thing that we've been talking about with regards to AI and what I've put in my LinkedIn post. You know, your laptop professionals or your laptop buyers agents, and what it really means to the consumer. This is where you've got to have that push, and you've got to have that. Trying to get the. It's all about turnover, right? So. And when it comes to turnover, when it comes to the industry itself, unfortunately, we don't hold a very good reputation. And what's happening, what Peter's bringing to our attention is what we've all also talked about in the past, and that is in relation to the actual the due diligence that professionals are meant to be doing for their clients, and they don't. So this is what I call these so-called laptop professionals, and people are going to come unstuck, Martin. People are going to lose a lot of money. Look, I'm of the opinion, and my opinion still holds, and that is that Melbourne's still got to sink another 5 to 10%, perhaps even a bit more in certain areas, and all because of the policies, government policies that are being imposed on investors. Investors are still walking away from the investment portfolios in Melbourne, in the outer Melbourne region, and this is where the so-called buyers agents are wanting to trade, believing that they hit the bottom of the market. That you've got two concerns for those that are looking into those markets is they are also very low socioeconomic areas, and you're going to end up with a lot of issues, and they've already got a lot of issues in a lot of these areas anyway. There were outer regions where all these developments happen, and there's no real duty of care by the local property managers, because it's really hard to go to and really hard to manage when you've got young 18, 19, 20 year olds, male and female, and they've got to confront irate tenants. So you've got all these issues that are going to be that are still yet to be played out. So we end up with what you would tracking towards slums, or as we say, in parts of South America, we call them favelas, and slums, because it becomes hard to manage. So this is what you've got when you've got a large cohort of investors, whether they're foreign investors or local investors into other states. It seems nice and shiny at the beginning, but it's post the delivery of the product that it's very, very important. Who's going to manage the properties as property managers, and who's going to manage the properties as strata lots? And this is why we go back to the we go back to 2013, when the gates were open for the where the Foreign Investment Review Board watered down the policies in all, as to who can own a property in a development. As I've shared many times on our forums, Martin, and that is that pre-2013, there was a situation where we couldn't sell more than 20% or so of the development whilst it was under construction to foreign investors. Now, post 2012, 2013, when it all got watered down, this is why it all kicked in. And this is why where the state government and the local government and federal government started making a mozza, because of the duties and the taxes that were collected on the way. Once they opened up that a whole development could be sold to foreign investors, whether it was one individual, whether it be multiple individuals buying 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 lots in one development. So then we moved from medium density, with small to medium density developments, to cater for the local appetite and to cater for the local demand. We went into high-rise developments and we brought in foreign investors. And look at these areas now, where you see all these high-rise developments around, certain parts of even affluent areas, certain parts of Hurstville, Canterbury, Parramatta, even Campbelltown. You've got a lot of areas where you've got this concentration. Mascot, in those areas they're absolute. In Liverpool, you go to some of these areas, and even I would be concerned about walking through some of these areas and streets past 7 o'clock in the evening, because they're like ghettos. It's like as I did that video with Jennifer Duke, I think it was around 2013 or thereabouts, where sorry, 2015, we called it the million-dollar ghettos, when we did that expose on the deterioration or dilapidation of units that were only 1 year, complexes that were only 1 year or 2 years old, and they were already having major issues. So in a way, when you go back to the beginning of our show, and we raised the whole thing about certain neighborhoods, certain affluent areas opposing high rise, I don't blame them, Martin, because we can't build high rise, and we've got major issues when we're building high rise next to waterways, or along the riverbanks, and along anywhere where it's got that water views. We have a hard time, and the reason is because we want to maximize the height, and therefore you have to dig down. And the further you dig, here in the east coast of Australia, you have a lot of issues. The building have a lot of issues. So this is where we're at. This is what's at play. So now, going back to Peter's post, you've we go back to what you and I have been saying, that there's no agent that should be receiving any coin whatsoever, any payment whatsoever, if they're not going to inspect the home, before they sell it. If they're not going to inspect the home before they auction it, and if they're not going to inspect the property before they offer it to as a buyer's agent to an investor or a first-time buyer. I mean, to me, that is travesty. That is, real estate 101 is, as a selling agent, you inspect the home before you give an appraisal. As an auctioneer, you should be inspecting the home before you front up on the day of the auction. And as a buyer's agent, you should be inspecting the home even more thoroughly before you recommend it to your client.
Absolutely. Caveat emptor, buyer beware. Just do your due diligence on the way in, not on the way out. And just going back to the broader ambience on property, I would just quickly talk about London. So there's this article here, Why London Property is on Life Support. And they're quoting here price falls, quite considerable price falls. And the question of will it will spread. There's a big question, of course, about property in the UK too. Similar things going on, by the way, a lot of high rise, a lot of poorly built stuff, a lot of issues. So it is very consistent, the story, and I think we're going to see a lot more of it ahead, Edwin.
Just quickly, with that post with London, I think we've got to be very, very clear with that. And that is although that we've got a lot of similarities with London, we're also there's a big chasm between. We're miles apart as well. You've got two developers in London that hold something like 140,000 lots, they're holding a lot of land that could build homes, or your triplexes, your terraces that you have a lot of there in England. That plays a big role. That plays a big part. And when you compare that to Sydney, where a lot of people on social media are making this comparison, and they're saying that the Sydney market is going to collapse, blah blah blah, or the Australian market is going to collapse because of what they're watching in London. I don't believe so. I don't believe it's going to be a while. It's going to We've also got a lot of differences. And the other one is, apart from the so when you look at the land envelopes that we've got for sale, it's just over 3,000. Or you know, around about the 3,000. When you compare 3,000 with 180,000 there, and you look at the value of the land there in comparison to what it's costing them to build, and you look at our values of land, you know, we're pretty much, you know, our construction is very high, and if you know, we're not building as much, but our land values are very, very high and very consistent, and we're getting a lot of foreign investment, whereas a lot of foreigners aren't necessarily investing in the UK anymore. Because the frighten of the again the socio-economical and political scene that's happening there in the UK, so that is driving foreign investors away. The Chinese are not buying or foreign investors, Asian, European, North American investors are not shying away. And the other thing that we spoke in a couple of shows ago was that we don't have the Asian influence there that they used to have, where they could build anything, and the Asian community would just buy it because they wanted to obviously park money away from China. Now, and the new migrants that are going into England, they're not into high-rise development, similarly to our picture here in Australia. We've got the new migrants that are coming in, or they're not into high rise. Then they're into apartments. The Silent Tigers are very much into house and land, because they know that the value is in the land, and they're not, you know, the wool isn't pulled over their eyes, other than buying homes in you know, subdivision, you know, newly subdivided lots in the fringes of Melbourne, where they're really getting stumped. So this is there's a big difference. And I think the other major difference between the UK and or London and Sydney, one of the other major reasons is the education facilities. Now, of you know, we're in constant communication with the UK C21 officers there, and the leadership team there, and you know, they've told us that, you know, to put a, you know, the preference for any Londoner is to put the children through private schooling. But private schooling there in the UK is anywhere from 400,000 to 600,000 pounds. Now, that's for, you know, to go from kindergarten to high school. That's a lot of money. Whereas here in Sydney, we've got our education system, our public education system, is still very highly ranked in many ways, and it's a very, very desirable. So this is they're the main differences. And yes, there are certain similarities. Now, obviously, if we get our developers here starting to dump a lot of properties, one of the things that's not really talked about, Martin, is that a lot of developers that hold land and hold property here in New South Wales, in Sydney, hold it under options. They haven't bought it outright. And from what I've heard so far and what I've been told so far, a lot of these developers that are offloading their undeveloped land plots there in the UK, in London, are actually, they bought them outright. So it's a big difference in buying something outright and buying something on an option. An option will cost you here, let's say, anywhere between 5 to 10% of the value of the land. Whereas when you, you know, so you could be walking away for $50,000, or you could be walking away from $100,000. But if you're holding $1 million, well, then it's a different story. Then you're going to hurt a lot more. So this is, yeah, so there are similarities, but also some differences.
And one quick last one from me. In the UK, a lot of more affluent people are leaving the UK because they've recently changed some of the tax regs, which means that more affluent people are being charged a lot more. Mansion tax is coming in, so, you know, higher taxes on bigger properties and other things too. So the environment in the UK for the more affluent is also changing quite dramatically, and that's creating a further removal of a lot of support for a lot of the purchases at the high end as well. So I think there's a lot to play for. And I think there is a significant difference there between what's happening in the UK, people leaving, and in Australia, where some of those people are leaving from the UK and going to Australia. And so we keep saying migration is strong. A lot of well-oiled people are coming to Australia with money to spend. And Edwin, I might just make the point here that we also, of course, saw the long-term movements from the ABS showing that we are still seeing very strong arrivals in Australia. So it is quite clear that the ongoing migration story continues to provide support for the market. And I think we're going to see that continuing. But I also would note, as I made a show the other day, I'd note that back in 1994, in fact, Bob Hawke made a frank admission that immigration policy had been a conspiracy by the political establishment against the Australian public, and that parties had deliberately kept it out of public debate, saying that there had been an implicit pact between the major parties to implement broad policies on immigration that they know are not generally endorsed by the electorate, and that they have done this by keeping the subject off the political agenda. Well, as I said earlier on, the truth is, of course, that now with One Nation leading the pack in terms of movement and popularity, well, the whole question of migration could well be back on the table too. So we'll watch this space and see how it plays out.
That's right. And talking about the taxes there in the UK, you've also got the inheritance tax. And now the inheritance tax is now calculated not only on the on your wealth in the UK, but it's also calculated on foreign ownership of property or any other assets that you may have outside of the UK, and it's going to be, all that is going to be taxed under the inheritance tax. So therefore, a lot of, as you said, very affluent people, the majority of them obviously are going to the UAE and parking all their assets there. I mean, the second richest man in the UK just picked up stumps and left only a month or so ago. Steel manufacturer there in the owner of the steel manufacturing plants there and transport. So yeah, so that makes a huge difference. And as I said earlier on, the migration policies there, or the people that are going into the UK are not very well to do. Whereas the new migrants that are coming in, a lot of the and moving forward. As I've stated before in our previous shows, and that is that whether it's the Labor Party or the Liberal Party, they need wealth to come into Australia in order to re-establish the SME sector, because it's the SME that keeps them oiled in the public sector.
Let's just look at the numbers for this last week, and we start in Sydney on the 12th. There were 19,147 properties listed for sale, as defined by domain in the region. This week on the 19th, 19,624 properties. And as you can see here from Edwin's chart, we are seeing a little bit of a rise, but it's still relatively benign compared with last year. In the Melbourne context, on the 12th, there were 25,202 properties listed compared with 25,923 the following week, so a little bit of a rise again, as you might expect at this time of year. And also, if you look in Brisbane, 2,331 last week compared with 2,529 this week on the 19th. And looking at the auction story, it's still pretty quiet at the moment, and we are still seeing the story where, in fact, there are smaller numbers of auctions than perhaps we might expect, because the market is still relatively quiet. And possibly more people are deciding not to take their properties to auction, but sell them through other mechanisms. And here, Edwin has been tracking the progress on a weekly basis, and you can see there that the 2026 numbers are below what we saw the last 2 years. And here's another way of looking at the same information. Looking finally at the rental sector, on the 12th in Sydney, 12,395 properties listed for rent. The following week, 12,070, so a slight fall on the 19th. In Melbourne, on the 12th, 12,019, compared with 11,715 on the 19th. So again, the same story. Rental availability is beginning to ease back, despite the fact that, of course, we did have the data from Domain that suggested that, in fact, the growth in rentals was slowing a little. Although if you look at the data that they provided, they also did show that the story was one of continued rental growth, but not quite as fast. Before I let you go, Edwin, let me just get your tip for the week, very important given what you're doing at the moment.
I think what we need to do, Martin, is be prepared for 2026 is already shaping up to be a very, very interesting, turbulent, whatever word you may want to choose to describe it for yourself. But if you're prepared, there's going to be many opportunities that are going to come by you, and if you're prepared, you're going to be able to see the opportunity and take advantage of the opportunity. We also need to be prepared in order for the many hiccups and adversities and that are going to be headed our way. So we need to be mentally, physically, emotionally, be around support groups. That mental health is going to be a big, I think, going to be a big issue in 2026. We're all going to be stretched. We are all going to be stretched. The reason why I'm still in Sydney and not doing this from the UK is because of certain things that happened last second. I was literally walking across the counter, the departure, into the departure lounge, and I had to turn around to sort out some stuff here back in Sydney. So if we're not mentally prepared, if we're not physically prepared to assist us with the mental health, and if we don't have a support structure around us, I think it's going to be even harder to get through 2026. So reach out, folks, and join the bigger family, and let us know how we can help you.
And also, I would say take time to chill out and enjoy, the simple things of life, like a walk in the country or the bush, a walk by the seaside, and enjoy family and friends. Don't get so caught up in all of the stress and strains that everyone's feeling at the moment, because that really can create physical problems, mental problems, relationships problems, and also it clouds your judgment when it comes to, for example, buying property. So. Smell the roses. And Edwin, I hope you have a good flight, and I hope you have a good time up there in Hong Kong and China. And I'll look forward to getting a debrief next time we chat.
All the best. And I just looked at the time. I've got to run.
See ya. Bye-bye. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultant standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer.